You say you've had it up to here with button-down shirts, crewneck sweaters, and most of all, alligator shirts. Well, get in line, Bunky. There are a few folks ahead of you. Among them, Mike Katz and Lawrence Curzius, both Princeton grads who've launched what they call the anti-preppy movement. Their motto? Save an alligator, shoot a preppy.
Sort of anti-American. Preppy. They're telling us that we can't be individuals. We have to be part of this very close-knit group. They're telling us we can't dress how we want to. We can't, you know, working for a living is not right. You have to have money and just be proper. And we're like, hey, wait a second. You know, I'm a normal person and I like the way I am and I'm going to express myself.
Katz, who hails from Baldwin, Long Island, tells us the movement grew out of his experiences at Princeton and a button, an alligator with a red slash through it that he made and distributed and caught on campus. It has inspired bumper stickers, shirts, buttons, a book, and an anti-preppy survival kit.
The survival kit is pretty much a necessity for anyone who wants to go out and show what they are and protect themselves from preppies who might, you know, try and get at them. And it contains many interesting items. It contains an alligator liberator, the alligator being the symbol of preppy. And this sort of poor defenseless alligator is held captive on a preppy shirt, and the alligator liberator, you go and you take it right off the shirt. And free it.
The liberator, in case you hadn't guessed, is a scissors. To cover the hole left by your liberating efforts, an anti-preppy pin. Why are alligators in need of liberation? Well, the way Michael sees it, preppies are impressing helpless alligators into service on their shirts, and the poor creatures could use a hand. And then, of course, there's the final caveat.
Which says, warning, the Surgeon General has determined that dressing too preppy may be hazardous to your health.
Is there really scientific proof for that?
It has been studied at Princeton University, as a matter of fact, and it has been proven that dressing preppy can be seriously impair your well-being.
Can you give me some concrete examples?
Oh, no.
All this, of course, rather tongue-in-cheek. With any luck, your favorite preppy won't be too offended, and it will give more than a few alligators a much-needed rest.
See you later, alligator.
Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I asked her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator. What she told me nearly made me lose my head. When I thought of what she told me nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, reminded her of what she said. See you later, alligator.
See you later, alligator. That's Bill Haley and the Comets at NEWFM. And this is FM, your radio magazine of the airwaves at 102.7 NEWFM. We all know familiarity breeds contempt. This is a case of confusion breeding recognition for a 25-year-old New York area rock and roller. His first efforts with a band named The Beat ran into competition with an English group of the same name. The Britishers now call themselves the English Beat, and Paul Collins calls his band the Paul Collins Beat. He spoke with NEWFM's Jim Monahan about his transition from fan to performer.
But you say you're from Manhattan.
Well, I was born in Doctor's Hospital in Manhattan. And I lived here, and I lived in Douglaston and Queens, and I also lived in Manhasset. I went to school there for about a year out in Long Island. So, you know, if the shoe fits, I can wear it. You know, but I'm basically New York, you know, based. I lived all over. I lived in Jersey, too. Lived in Old Tappan and Leonia, which is right across the bridge.
You've had a remarkably, maybe it won't seem that way to you, but a fast career for somebody your age. The first record came out, and there was all kinds of confusion because of two bands having the same name. How do you go from being big state of confusion to a hit record?
One of the most exciting things about making records is, you know, here you are by yourself, you come up with ideas for a song, you're working with your group, and in a very isolated circumstance, you record this stuff, you know, pretty much unbeknownst to the world, and then you put it out, and it circulates itself in all these different areas, and, I mean, that's, to me, the most exciting thing about records is it goes to places that you can't go to, or, you know, it's all over at the same time. This is exciting for me. I've never had a record. I mean, this is my second record, and I've never had a record that's gotten this kind of attention. So for me, it's all real new and real exciting because I started out in this business basically as a fan, like anybody else, you know, listening to radio, basically. When I was living here, especially like 68 and 69, Cousin Brucey and Harry Harrison, those guys really, I think, influenced the music that they play, really influenced the music that I do now. I think everybody who's involved with rock and roll at one point or another starts out as a fan, just, you know, being excited by the type of thing that rock and roll presents.
An interesting story about how you got together with Bill Graham, and it involves another New Yorker, kind of an ex-cop.
Yeah, ex-cop. Eddie Money, yeah. Eddie Money is really responsible for my being signed to CBS Columbia and for my being signed with Bill Graham. And the way that came about is a long time ago in San Francisco, I was in a group called The Nerves there. This is like 1974, 75. We couldn't get work anywhere. I mean, we literally couldn't get work. This was in the heyday of a lot of disco and a lot of... everybody was like the Congo player from Sly Stone or Santana, you know, it was like all offshoot bands, and anybody without a name was pretty much, it was a hopeless case. And I used to see Eddie's name in the San Francisco Chronicle all the time. He was playing around, and I called him up one day and I said, look, you know, we made this little record, we got this group, we can't get any gigs, can we open up for you because you're playing all the time? So he says, yeah, you know, come over and play me the record. And it turns out, you know, he's from New York, I'm from New York, and he's gonna kind of like an older brother trip, he's gonna school me and take care of me. And we opened up for him, and it was really funny. In this one gig we did, the club owner came up to Eddie and said, what are you, crazy? Get these guys out of here. And the guy hated us so much that he wouldn't let us wait in the club. He made us wait out in the parking lot, and we had come up with Eddie, so we couldn't go home, so we had to wait in the parking lot until Eddie was done with the gig. The night that Bill decided that he was going to sign us was the night of Cal Jam 2 in Los Angeles, and Eddie was playing there. And we were rehearsing at this little rehearsal hall out in the valley, and Eddie drags Bill and all these people out to see us, and they get lost, and they're driving around in the middle of the night, and Bill's going, Eddie, come on, I want to go home, I got to get out of here. Finally, he gets there and he drags Bill in, and I knew then it was either do or die, and we ran through a couple of numbers for him, and he really got off on it.
On the highway, on the roadside.
Paul, you have a remarkably different attitude towards large record companies and how they help new bands like yours.
You know, a lot of people say, well, the big companies are the worst offenders, but that's not really true, because a lot of the big companies are the only ones that have the money to do it. And it comes down to dollars and cents, unfortunately, in some cases, because making records is not what it used to be. I mean, it's an expensive project, and people can't make as many records as they did in the old days. I mean, in the old days, they could make records and put them out and see what happened. Nowadays, they've got to make a record count, you know, because of the economy.
That was Paul Collins of the Paul Collins Beat with Jim Monahan on NEW FM. You're listening to FM, the radio magazine of the airwaves.
I'm Stacey Kahn, and this is Roundabout for the week of March 21st. The New World Orchestral Society Woodwind Quartet will be celebrating the Rites of Spring at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Admission is $2. Tomorrow, Monday, the 22nd, NAM, A Look at 30 Years in Vietnam, a documentary, will be presented at NYU's Loeb Center, room 511 at 7:30. Admission is $1.50. On Tuesday, the 23rd, the films We Are the Guinea Pigs and Harris will be shown to commemorate the third anniversary of the accident at Three Mile Island at the Terrazzo Theater, 360 East 10th Street at 8 o'clock. Admission is $1. On Friday, March 26th and Saturday, the 27th, Yo-Yo and the Great Blondini, two world-famous clowns, will appear in a special two-person act for the Mimes and Miniatures festivities at the Brooklyn Arts and Culture Association. For more information, you can call 596-2222. Time to get in shape. The Brooklyn Skills Exchange will sponsor a free workshop on Saturday, the 27th, called Spring Tune-Up for Your Feet, given by Dr. Herbert Rauscher at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. The workshop runs from 2 to 4. It's free and open to the public. On Sunday, March 28th, the Bronx Historical Society will hold its annual auction at Lehman College. Things auctioned off in the past include century-old newspapers, 19th century beer bottles, and the like. Admission is a $1 donation, and for more information, you can call 881-8900. And in the galleries, the works of David Levine, watercolors and caricatures, will be on exhibit at the Forum, Madison Avenue at 79th Street through April 10th. At the Bloom Hellman, 20 West 57th Street, pop art by Warhol, Lichtenstein, and Oldenburg, also through the 10th of April. And Lower Manhattan, Street to Sky, paintings of the Woolworth Building, the Brooklyn Bridge, and other downtown landmarks. At the Federal Hall National Memorial, 26 Wall Street, through April 30th.
Witty and on target. Target, the Comedy of Chicago City Limits has been entertaining New York audiences for 2 years. They're currently appearing in Chicago City Limits with Clam Sauce, and we corralled them long enough to get them to explain the nature of just exactly what it is they do.
They sound off now.
They sound off, don't they? They're on?
This one's on.
This one, this is on now. No, this one's off.
The middle one is...
Hello? This is off.
Chicago City Limits to Earth. Come in.
Hello.
We're on now.
Now we're on.
Okay, we're on.
Now we're in Chicago City Limits and we improvise, which means we need something from you right now. And that's a suggestion of a problem, something that bugs you right now. Come on. Traffic? Traffic bugs you? Well, this is a crowded room. Traffic is definitely something that can make you sing a song that sounds like a train.
The other day I was out for a ride. A guy nearly took my hide. I almost had a heart attack. He said, buddy, I'm gonna shove that jack. They took my car, they towed it away, I didn't have a chance. Give me a break, I was driving an ambulance. I got
traffic blues.
Doesn't matter what kind of ID you use, the city will give you the traffic blues.
They are, as they said, Chicago City Limits, and as their name might suggest, they were conceived in Chicago, but they love New York.
Most of us are from the East, so we came to New York, and instantly went into some of these the showcase clubs, the Improvisation, Catch a Rising Star, the Comic Strip. Did well and felt, hey, this is a city for us. We like New York. We know New York. We know the subway system, so why throw out something you know? And we moved.
Paul Zuckerman with Carol Schindler, two of the five of the company's actor members. The group came together 5 years ago under the direction of George Todisco, the company's founder, who died last month at age 30. What they do is performance improv, developed 25 years ago in Chicago with the Compass Players.
People have always used improvisation as an acting technique or an acting skill to, you know, use it to get into a character or to develop a character. However, 25 years ago, Paul Sills, who happens to be Viola Spolin's son, right? Now, Viola Spolin wrote the book on improvisation. He developed improvisation for the stage. In other words, instead of using it as a technique in a workshop, he developed it so that you could use it as a form of entertainment.
Most of the original Not Ready for Prime Time players were well-grounded in improv, a performing tool that really keeps you on your toes.
The thing that you have to do in improvisation is instantly be able to drop what you have. Sometimes you have this great idea for a scene, but somebody is just comes off with something that's very different. You have to immediately drop that idea and say, okay, we're going to do this right now.
You have to be able to listen intently on stage and to create. And it's creating immediately. It's not creating, you know, you can sit home and write, which I also enjoy. Writing is an also nice way of creating. But when you're on the stage and you have an audience there and you're at, can I say that on my ear? And your rear end is on the line. Oh. And that's exciting.
It's with improvisation Chicago City Limits develops some of the set pieces for their reviews. Ideas coming in after-hours performances based totally on audience suggestion.
We tape a lot of those shows so that we have what we did on tape, and then we go into rehearsal and we look at the tape or we listen to the tape, whichever kind of tape we used, and we say, this was good, it'll even be better if we do this, 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 and this. So then that's how we develop our set pieces.
Monster!
One sweep of its arm, it will defoliate an entire continent.
No!
With a mere movement of its fingers, tall trees come toppling down. And most important of all, Egrets, it has no conscience.
But, Master, what will you call it?
The Secretary of the Interior.
That little poke at James Watt from Chicago City Limits' latest, Chicago City Limits, with clam sauce.
Why with clam sauce? Why not?
Wait, I have two salad forks. My potato is bad.
Bad potato!
Let me know.
That's just a sample. All this and more Wednesday through Saturday at the Yonhus Playhouse on East 74th Street, Manhattan. Ladies and gentlemen.
Chicago City Limits. Singing a song that sounds like a train.
That about does it. Thanks for joining us this week on FM. We'll be back in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, we'd like to hear from you about what you'd like to hear on FM. Send all suggestions to FM, care of WNEW-FM, 655 3rd Avenue, New York, 10017. FM is produced by Earl Bailey. I'm Robin Sagan. See you in 2 weeks.